welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. We'll teach you how to turn your foreign government workplace into a dysfunctional mess. But first, let's take an article from The Telegraph, James. EU auditors find billions of dollars in fraud in EU emissions trading scheme. The EU's main scheme, I love how they call it a scheme, for reducing CO2 emissions is almost never enforced, according to an official report by Brussels' own spending watchdog. Only one EU country inspected, Britain, makes on-the-spot visits to factories to check whether they are staying within their carbon limits under the scheme, the EU Court of Auditors found. Even the UK only checks 1% of sites, down from 5% from before. The auditors also said that attempts to stamp out endemic fraud in the EU's flagship emissions trading scheme, or ETS, from which billions of pounds of carbon credits have been stolen by criminals, are not adequate and continue to leave significant security weaknesses. The verdicts will be deeply embarrassing on the eve of the United Nations Climate Summit in Paris, where European leaders will claim the ETS is their flagship achievement to tackle climate change. Quote, the truth about the ETS is that it has completely failed. It has cost business money and done nothing to reduce CO2. It is based on a fundamentally flawed premise, and as the latest report shows, all attempts to fix it are doomed. It is a hopeless case to take to Paris, end quote, said Raoul Ruperel, deputy director of the Open Europe think tank. So, James, this is obviously a story from a week or so ago because they're talking about heading off to Paris. And we've covered a lot of this recently here on New World Next Week with the possible International Climate Court and, of course, the Volkswagen carbon fraud. And you, of course, have been covering a lot of this in depth during the COP21 hullabaloo. So is this just more evidence of fraud to add to the stack, James?
You think? Yeah, scheme is the operative word, or scam might be another operative word here. But yes, if you go on to read the rest of that article, you find that not only has it not decreased emissions, but this trading scheme has actually increased emissions by 600 million tons. They do not give a flying you-know-what about this scheme or what it's doing in terms of carbon. It's just a fraud, complete, total fraud. Billions and billions of dollars of companies selling these phony credits into the market. So, yes, I mean, take it for what it's worth, and it's unfortunately not surprising in the least. The entire idea of these emissions trading schemes has been developed from the beginning by financial insiders who have billions and billions and ultimately trillions of dollars to gain from it. And we can go back to the 1990s. The EPA started a sulfur dioxide cap and trade that was $20 billion a year at that time. Guess who was one of the founding movers and shakers in that market and one of the largest traders? Enron, of course. Enron was a big trader in that market, and so they saw the opportunity for not a $20 billion a year peanuts sulfur dioxide cap and trade. The big one was, of course, carbon dioxide, $700 billion estimated market in the United States. So they started in the mid-1990s, they started an Enron Foundation that's funded the Nature Conservancy and other green groups lobbying against carbon dioxide, that vile, life-giving plant food. And they met, in fact, Ken Lay, the CEO of Enron, met with BP's Lord John Brown and Clinton and Gore in 1997 to work out the Clinton White House plan for cap and trade and carbon emissions and all of that. Of course, thankfully, it ultimately failed. The U.S. didn't ratify Kyoto, but they just went back to the drawing board and kept at it. And that's what they're still trying to do. Now they have a $172 billion carbon trading market worldwide estimated in 2011. To put that in perspective, that's almost the same size as the entire global wheat market. Whereas the wheat industry actually gives 20% of the caloric intake of the 7 billion people on this planet, the carbon trading emission market is a scam top to bottom that only gives people like Al Gore their lakeside mansions. So it's just a total fraud based on total fraud science. And unfortunately, a lot of people not only swallow it up, but ask for seconds. So that's what Paris is ultimately about. And just to put this in perspective, the IEA has estimated it's going to take something like $13 trillion over the next 15 years to start to transition into the low-carbon economy. And the estimate for infrastructure investment needed over the next 15 years is $90 trillion. There are hundreds of trillions of dollars on the line with this fraud, and that's why people are so concerned about carbon dioxide.
James, I had even forgotten it. We'll have to add it to the show notes because it was just a couple of weeks ago, a couple months ago, we were talking about the massive fires in Indonesia, putting out more pollution than anything happening here in the stateside. And I was going to mention here in the stateside, of course, you mentioned Gore, but it's, you know, it's the J.P. Morgans and the Rockefeller gangs that are also a part of all of these kind of
carbons. And Goldman Sachs, don't forget.
Well, sorry. I wouldn't want to leave them out of it as well. James, our second story this week is not from The Onion, although it kind of sounds like it in some way. We'll take it from an article written by Jake Anderson on the Anti-Media Declassified CIA Manual shows how U.S. uses bureaucracy to destabilize governments. When most people think of CIA sabotage, they think of coups, assassinations, proxy wars, armed rebel groups, and even false flags, not strategic stupidity and purposeful bureaucratic ineptitude. However, according to a declassified document from 1944, the OSS, that's the Office of Strategic Services, which later became the CIA, used and trained a curious breed of citizen saboteurs in occupied nations like Norway and France. This World War II era document, called Simple Sabotage Field Manual, outlines ways in which operatives can disrupt and demoralize enemy administrators and police forces. The first section of the document, which can be read in its entirety, and we'll of course include the links for you, addresses organizations and conferences and how to turn them into a dysfunctional mess. Insist on doing everything through channels. Never permit shortcuts to be taken in order to expedite decisions. Make speeches. Talk as frequently as possible and at great length. Illustrate your points by long anecdotes and accounts of personal experiences. When possible, refer all matters to committees for further study and consideration. Attempt to make the committee as large as possible, never less than five. Bring up irrelevant issues as frequently as possible. Haggle over precise wordings of communications, minutes, resolutions. Refer back to matters decided upon at the last meeting and attempt to reopen the question of the advisability of that decision. Advocate caution. Be reasonable and urge your fellow conferees to be reasonable and avoid haste, which might result in embarrassments or difficulties later on. James, on its official website, the CIA boasts about finding innovative ways to bring about sabotage, calling their tactics for destabilization surprisingly relevant. While they admit that some of the ideas may seem a bit outdated, they claim that, quote, together, they are a reminder of how easily productivity and order can be undermined. In a second section targeted at manager saboteurs, the guide lists the following tactical moves, James. In making work assignments, always sign out the unimportant jobs first and see that the important jobs are assigned to inefficient workers. Insist on perfect work in relatively unimportant products. Send back for refinishing those which have the least flaws. To lower morale, and with it production, be pleasant to inefficient workers. Give them undeserved promotions. Hold conferences when there's more critical work to be done, and multiply the procedures and clearances involved in issuing instructions, paychecks, and so on. See that three people have to approve everything where one would do. Now, James, finally, the guide presents protocol for how saboteur employees can disrupt enemy operations too. Work slowly. Contrive as many interruptions to your work as you can. Do your work poorly and blame it on bad tools, machinery, and equipment, and complain that these things are preventing you from doing your job right. And never pass on your skills and experiences to a new or less skillful worker. The CIA is very proud of its Kafkaesque field manual and evidently still views it as an unorthodox but effective form of destabilizing enemy operations around the world. Of course, so too might an anarchist or revolutionary look at such tactics and view them in the context of disrupting certain domestic power structures, many of which are already built like a bureaucratic house of cards. So it seems if any country should refrain from showcasing how easy it is to disrupt inefficient federal agencies, however, it would be the United States. Now, James, as you go through those points, I look at all of those, and it kind of sounds like maybe people that have worked at any job around, and I think probably we've all run into these kind of situations, and I'm not saying it's because of CIA infiltration, it's just sort of the natural way that things kind of crash and burn, if you will, James. And I think a lot of times people want to tell the alternative media, why don't you guys should all get together, you guys should all join and bring your forces all together. This is a perfect reason why that's not generally a good idea, James.
Yeah, I was going to say this sounds like every office I've ever worked
exactly.
in. I just thought it was inefficient people, but apparently it's saboteurs. No, but the point is well taken. Bureaucracy is by its nature. It works against whatever goal might the organization might have in mind, and the more bureaucratic nonsense you throw in there, the more it's going to gum up the works. But I didn't think of it from that angle. Well, actually, yes, it's a good thing to gum up the works of government so it can't do its tyrannical dirty deeds, so I guess that is a good thing. And I actually did do some temp work for Calgary City Hall way, way, way back in the day, and trust me, I have never seen a less efficient place in my life, so I guess there's that is a good thing. They're not able to do so much tyrannical nonsense. But I do suggest people go actually to the CIA website and read their write-up on it and read the actual document itself. Just reading from their little write-up under the headline, Surprisingly Relevant Sabotage Instructions. It says, many of the sabotage instructions guide ordinary citizens who may not have agreed with their country's wartime policies towards the U.S. to destabilize their governments by taking disruptive actions. Some of the instructions seem outdated. Others remain surprisingly relevant. Together, they are a reminder of how easily productivity and order can be undermined. So there it is, black and white, in their own words. Undermine the order, and I guess you can bring in some new order from the chaos.
And yeah, I guess maybe in a different week, James, we could have even spun that in a different way and called that a sort of good news next week story about how to use this to disrupt your own bureaucratic nowhere job here at home. And this even kind of reminds me, that's what Jello Biafra called many, many years ago, monkey wrenching the new world order. So we do have a good news next week story this week, and we have been giving you good news all through 2015, James. We have made it all through pretty much all 12 months of giving at least some kind of good news in all of these episodes. And we'll take this story from good old Auntie Beeb in the UK. Young people in the UK aren't interested in joining the military. The Army is not recruiting enough young people, missing its own requirements for 9 out of the last 10 years. Major General Chris Tickle, in charge of recruitment, says the military needs to change their message. We are still underachieving in terms of what our overall targets are, and we work very hard on a daily basis to close that gap. The generation we are trying to recruit has a different view on life than previous generations. After spending millions of pounds on recent publicity campaigns, he insists things are turning around. Quote, we are attracting thousands of young men and women into the Army, both regular and reserve, week in, week out. I think the challenge for us looking forward is becoming greater. We need to explain to the young men and women that the Army is actually much more than just about combat. Over the last 10 years, there's been an understandable focus on our operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. But over the last 2 years, we have done some fantastic work in Sierra Leone combating the Ebola crisis, which they probably helped spread in the first place. But let's not get into that, James. I've got a slew of articles from the Media Monarchy archives about what maybe happens when you can't get quality meat for the war machine. You lower your standards. Here are 4 articles, James, that are almost 10 years old. So imagine where we are now from where we were talking about this 10 years ago. The U.S. is recruiting misfits for the Army. That's from October 2006. That's from the San Francisco Chronicle. Military accepting more ex-cons. That's February 2007, and that's from Stars and Stripes. Then we've also got gangs spreading in the military, and Army expands by lowering the bar on recruits. Those from July and November 2007, respectively. All of those links will be included, James. And again, I think it just shows maybe on a lot of levels, when people are wising up and they're not buying the crappy food anymore, they're not joining your crappy military anymore, you have to sort of change the message, which is kind of hilarious in that story, James.
Yeah, that's right. And they do talk about the new recent publicity campaigns, which are helping to recruit more people. And they do have to try to sell it, because who would willingly step into the meat grinder? Who would say, yes, I want to be cannon fodder and fodder for experimental vaccines and all the other experimental garbage that they do to the people in the military? Of course not. So yes, it's a good sign. People are less willing to believe the nonsense and less willing to step into this meat grinder for what exactly? Why have we been occupying and invading Afghanistan for 15 years now or whatever it is? I mean, it's insanity. And it's hard to sell insanity to a public that has anything left of common sense. And I guess there's a few shreds left there in the UK. So hats off to all those people who are not joining the military and not stepping into that meat grinder.
That article, James, also mentions how it's more expensive to train one soldier than it would be for that person to go to college. So even when you just break down the math, it's like, yeah, I don't know why I would ever want to do that. A couple of other Good News Next Week updates from people using hashtag Good News Next Week. Finland considering giving every citizen $876 a month in basic income. And James, I can't remember if we hit this before. It seems like it floats around a lot. Russia claims aim to become world's largest organic food hub. So those are the Good News Next Week updates and a couple of the other New World Next Week updates using the classic hashtag. Australian police storm the home of outed Bitcoin founder. Global oil prices plunge below $40. The IMF gets into the Cold War by forgiving Ukraine's debt to Russia. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel named CIA Skull and Bones Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And back here in the States, the IRS power to revoke passports has been signed into law. God help us all, James.
Indeed. All right, that's it for this week. Well, looking forward to it again next week. James, Evan Pilato, MediaMonarchy.com. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. See you again next week.